January 29, 2011, Loudoun County, Virginia. 21-year-old Bethany Decker calls her place of employment to find out her work schedule, but does not show up for her shift that night. When Bethany fails to surface for 3 weeks, she is officially reported missing. At that time, Bethany was pregnant and her husband had been deployed to Afghanistan, but she was carrying on an affair with another man named Ronald Roldan, who was known for being abusive and controlling. Years later, Ronald is charged with attempted murder after shooting another woman. But while he remains a person of interest in Bethany's disappearance, no trace of her has ever been found. After that, the trail went cold.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warner, and today we're going to be covering a missing persons case involving a pregnant woman, the 2011 disappearance of Bethany Decker. That voice you just heard narrating our intro was Heather Engel, the latest winner of our most recent Trail Went Cold listener voiceover contest, so thank you very much, Heather. This is a recurring monthly contest which we've been carrying on for 3 years now, and if you'd like to enter, and haven't already done so, I will be providing instructions at the end of this episode. Anyway, today's featured case was requested by Heather when she originally entered this contest, and it has received a lot of attention over the past decade after being featured on such true crime shows as Disappeared, Nancy Grace, and Crime Watch Daily. Bethany Decker was a young married university student with a 17-month-old son, whose husband Emil was in the Army National Guard, and as a result, he was often away for long periods of time for training or deployment. Shortly before she went missing, Bethany revealed to Emil that she was pregnant, but there's a good chance that the child's father was another man named Ronald Roldan, whom Bethany had been having an affair with. Unfortunately, Ronald was known for being controlling and abusive, and Bethany seemed desperate to escape the relationship. I've often seen this case described as a love triangle, as on the surface, it seemed like both of the men in Bethany's life would have a potential motive to harm her. However, only one of these men had a history of violence, and he would find himself in trouble with the law years later for the attempted murder of another estranged girlfriend. But in spite of all these new developments, nearly a decade has passed, and Bethany has still not been found. So we're going to explore the circumstances of how she went missing on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the unsolved disappearance of Bethany Decker. Our story begins in Loudoun County, Virginia in 2011. Our central figure is 21-year-old Bethany Littlejohn Decker, who has been married for nearly 2 years to her husband, Emil Decker. The couple originally met while attending George Mason University, but shortly after they got engaged, Bethany discovered that she was pregnant. 6 months after the wedding, Bethany gave birth to a son named Kai. Emil was a cadet in the university's Reserve Officers Training Corps and preparing for a career in the military as an Army National Guardsman, but this would cause him to be away from his wife and newborn son for long periods of time, as he was often sent off for training and deployments. As a result, Bethany would be given most of the responsibility of raising Kai, but her mother, Kim Nelson, who lives in Fredericksburg, offered to help take care of the child so that Bethany could finish university, where she is majoring in global and economic change. While Kai remains with his grandmother, Bethany has moved into her own apartment in the town of Ashburn and is balancing her schoolwork with a full-time job as a waitress at Carrabba's Italian Grill in Centerville. She is only a few months away from graduating, but since Emil's lengthy absences have caused strain on their marriage, he is not currently living with Bethany. Months earlier, Emil was shipped off to Camp Atterbury in Indiana for training before his unit was deployed to Afghanistan. On January the 17th, Emil would finally return to the U.S. for some leave and was planning to travel to Hawaii for a pre-booked vacation with Bethany. In spite of their personal issues, the couple still decided to take their vacation together as planned in hopes that it might help repair their marriage. Shortly after they returned home, Bethany and Emil both traveled to Columbia, Maryland to visit Bethany's maternal grandparents, Evelyn and Ed Bales, on the evening of January the 28th. The Baleses offered to let the couple spend the night, but while they were having dinner, Bethany received a number of text messages on her phone. She seemed noticeably concerned about something, and soon abruptly informed her grandparents that she had to leave. Bethany told Emil that she was returning to her apartment in Ashburn, while he returned to the place he was staying during his leave, but she promised him she would drive him to the airport and see him off when he left to return to Afghanistan later that week. The following day, Bethany called Carrabba's Italian Grill from her apartment to confirm her work schedule, but she did not show up for her shift that night, and this would turn out to be the last time she was confirmed to be alive. Emil did not have any contact with Bethany over the next several days, but she failed to pick him up as promised on February the 2nd or see him off at the airport, even though she had always done so whenever he left on deployment in the past. Emil was unable to reach Bethany on her cell phone, but due to their marital troubles, no one was particularly troubled by Bethany's absence. Over the course of the next 2.5 weeks, no one was able to reach Bethany at all, but once again, they were not particularly concerned, since Bethany was known for being extremely busy while balancing her schoolwork and full-time job, and it was not uncommon for her friends and family to go long periods of time without seeing or hearing from her. However, Bethany's grandmother Evelyn would be contacted by her former university roommate, Sarah Malachowdy, who expressed concerns about some activity on Bethany's Facebook account. According to Sarah, Bethany had recently made some posts and comments on Facebook which came across as very odd. They were poorly written, and the English was not very good, so Sarah was not entirely sure if Bethany herself had posted them. Sarah decided to perform a test by asking Bethany questions that only she would have known the answers to, but these questions were never answered. Evelyn became concerned enough that she and Ed decided to drive to Bethany's apartment complex in order to check on her. When they arrived, they discovered that Bethany's Hyundai was still parked outside, but the vehicle had a flat tire, appeared to be very dusty, and seemed to be parked at an unusual angle. When the Baleses knocked on Bethany's apartment door, there was no answer, so they contacted the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office to officially report her missing. It would turn out that in addition to missing her shift at Carrabba's Italian Grill on the evening of January the 29th, Bethany had not shown up for any of her scheduled shifts. She never called in to explain her absences, and had also not shown up for any of her university classes over the past 3 weeks. There was also no recent activity on Bethany's bank accounts, cell phone, or email, and her odd Facebook posts seemed to be the only contact from her at all since the 29th. The Loudoun County Sheriff's Office eventually got in touch with the Army's Criminal Investigation Command for assistance with tracking down Emil in Afghanistan. After Emil was informed about what was going on, arrangements were made to return him to the United States, where he would be formally questioned about Bethany's disappearance. He even agreed to take a polygraph test, which he wound up passing. The focus would shift away from Emil once investigators learned that Bethany had been carrying on an extramarital affair with someone she had met at her workplace, a 30-year-old Bolivian immigrant named Ronald Roldan. The affair began sometime in late 2010, and Bethany likely began seeing Ronald before Emil even left on his latest deployment. In fact, Emil actually recalled an incident where she saw Bethany receive flirtatious texts on her phone from someone named Ronald, though when he confronted her about them, she denied that anything was going on. After Emil went to Camp Atterbury for training, she continued to remain in contact with Bethany until she seemed to cut off all communication with him. When Emil finally spoke with Bethany over the phone, she told him to stop calling and that she didn't love him anymore, but Emil was certain he could hear a male voice in the background who told him to, quote-unquote, man up, before Bethany abruptly ended the call. It turned out that during Emil's absence, Ronald had actually moved into Bethany's apartment about 2 months before she went missing. After Emil returned to Virginia on January the 17th, Bethany finally confessed about her affair with Ronald, but she provided an additional shocker when she told him she was pregnant. While it was suspected that Ronald was the biological father of Bethany's unborn child, this was never conclusively proven. Emil seemed to be under the impression that Bethany was ending things with Ronald, which is why he still agreed to take the vacation to Hawaii with her, but it turned out that she was trapped in an abusive and controlling relationship. According to Bethany's friends, whenever she went out with them, it was common practice for Ronald to call or text her cell phone several times, demanding that Bethany send him a picture to show him where she was. On one occasion, Ronald followed Bethany when she visited her mother Kim in Fredericksburg and stayed parked outside the house to watch her. Bethany had also said that Ronald once threw her across the room into a wall, and on another occasion, he allegedly threatened to cut Bethany open with her car keys. Even though Kim advised Bethany to end the relationship, she seemed too frightened to do so, so Kim had been developing a plan to help her escape. It also turned out that Ronald had a prior arrest record for such offenses as identity fraud, DUI, public intoxication, and destruction of property after an incident where he smashed a woman's car window. In retrospect, it seemed likely that the text messages Bethany had kept receiving when she visited her grandparents' house for the final time came from Ronald. The lease for Bethany's apartment expired on January the 31st, 2 days after she was last seen, and since only her name was on the lease, Ronald would leave the premises and move in with his mother in Centerville. When questioned by police, Ronald claimed he was with Bethany in her apartment on the afternoon of January the 29th, which technically made him the last person to admit seeing her alive. When she left that day, Ronald believed she was heading to work for a shift, but of course, she never showed up. When she did not return, he assumed that Bethany was just visiting her family, which is why he never reported her missing. According to investigators, they started to become suspicious of Ronald after he gave what they described as inconsistent answers when asked about the last time he could recall seeing Bethany's Hyundai parked outside her apartment complex. Police obtained search warrants for both Bethany's apartment and Ronald's mother's house, where they would seize a number of items, including a laptop and several cell phones, for forensic examination. While it was suspected that Ronald was the person who made the strange posts on Bethany's Facebook account, it could not be conclusively proven. Evidence was apparently found which showed that Ronald did attempt to contact Bethany during the time period she was missing, but regardless, police still named him as a person of interest. Ronald would decline numerous requests to take a polygraph test, and eventually stopped cooperating with the investigation. The following year, Ronald's attorney would make a public statement about the case on his behalf, saying, quote, "My client remains hopeful and prays daily that Bethany will come home. He has complete confidence they're working hard on the case," end quote. According to Kim Hunter, Ronald never made any attempt to reach out to her family following Bethany's disappearance. While Emil has never been named as a suspect or person of interest, he would eventually make the decision to no longer speak with law enforcement unless his lawyer was present. Following his permanent return to the U.S., Emil obtained a divorce from Bethany in her absence and received full custody of their son Kai. The scheduled due date for Bethany's second child was August the 7th, 2011, so around this time period, the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office would circulate photos of Bethany, which had been taken during the late stages of her first pregnancy. They hoped that if she was still alive somewhere, she would be recognized when she attempted to give birth, but there would be no reported sightings of her. In November of 2012, the case would receive national exposure when it was featured on an episode of the Investigation Discovery true crime series Disappeared. In spite of this, the investigation remained at a standstill, but just under 2 years after the original airing of that episode, Ronald Rolden would find himself in serious legal trouble after a violent attack on another woman. In 2014, while they were working together at a restaurant in Manassas, Ronald became involved in a relationship with 48-year-old Vicky Willoughby. However, Vicky soon found Ronald to be extremely controlling and possessive, and concern grew when she found out about Bethany Decker's disappearance and learned that her current boyfriend was a person of interest in that case. Vicky decided to quit her job and move to a house she owned in Pinehurst, North Carolina, in order to get away from Ronald, but once he found out about this, he demanded to go to Pinehurst with Vicky and forced her to allow him to move in with her. Shortly before 2 a.m. on November the 12th, a heated argument ensued at the house, which escalated into violence, as Ronald grabbed Vicky's hair, snapped her neck so hard that it broke, and pummeled her face. While she was on the living room floor, Vicky managed to crawl towards a .38 caliber handgun she had hidden underneath a living room chair. After grabbing it, Vicky would fire off one shot into Ronald's chest and another shot into his abdomen. Ronald still managed to fight back and grab the gun away from Vicky before he fired off 3 shots at her, which wound up striking her forearm, leg, and head. However, Vicky was able to survive this, and when Ronald left the room, she was able to escape the house and flee to a neighbor's for help. After 911 was called, the police and medical assistants arrived at the scene, and both Ronald and Vicky survived their gunshot wounds. However, the bullet fired at Vicky's head would remain lodged in there, and she wound up losing her right eye. The authorities immediately ruled that Vicky's shooting of Ronald was an act of self-defense, so she would not face any charges, but Ronald was charged with assault with a deadly weapon, assault on a female, and discharging a firearm in an occupied dwelling. Vicky claimed that while Ronald was violently attacking her, he said he could, quote-unquote, make people disappear. While being held in the Moore County Jail on a $1 million bond, Ronald would eventually be given the additional charge of attempted murder, but he pled not guilty to all the charges. Detectives from Loudoun County contacted Ronald in jail to see if he would be willing to answer questions about Bethany's disappearance, but he refused to cooperate. While Ronald was awaiting trial, the Moore County District Attorney's Office would face a number of setbacks due to some technicalities caused by mistakes in the investigation. A judge ruled that the wording in the search warrant was too broad, which meant that a lot of the evidence obtained against Ronald, including the gun, would be thrown out and could not be used at trial. So in May of 2016, Ronald agreed to accept a plea bargain. In exchange for the district attorney's office dropping the attempted murder charge, Ronald would plead guilty to the lesser charges, a felony assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury, and felony assault inflicting serious bodily injury, and he received a sentence of 68 years in prison. At the time of this recording, Ronald is still incarcerated, though once his sentence is completed, he will immediately be handed over into the custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement for deportation proceedings in order to return him to his native Bolivia. At the moment, there is still not enough evidence to conclusively link Ronald to the disappearance of Bethany Decker, and she continues to remain a missing person. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Anyway, this is a missing persons case, which has gotten a lot of attention because the media has often sensationalized this story and described it as a love triangle where a woman is caught between two men and one of them is suspected of being responsible for her disappearance. And unfortunately, this is also one of those cases where if you do any research online, you're going to find some pretty awful things said about the victim, particularly on message boards and comment sections. Yes, Bethany was a young mother who technically cheated on her husband with another man, and for this reason, There appear to be some people who don't believe she is worthy of any sympathy. But victim blaming is not something we do here on The Trail When Cold, so the first thing which must be stated is that regardless of what personal choices Bethany made, she most definitely did not deserve to be murdered. By the sound of things, Bethany was just someone who got married and had a child before she was ready for the full responsibility, especially since she would have to handle an infant son, finish school, and work a full-time job while her husband was away for months at a time. She seemed to get herself in way over her head once Ronald Rolden entered her life, and no one deserves to be trapped in a relationship with a person as controlling and abusive as he is. Now, I originally became familiar with this case when it aired on Disappeared several years ago, and at the time, the episode was trying to at least maintain some ambiguity about whether Emile Decker or Ronald Rolden was most likely to be responsible for Bethany's disappearance. But it was also filmed 2 years before the incident, where Ronald attempted to murder another girlfriend of his, and, well, I think that development takes a lot of the ambiguity away. All that being said, there was still no direct evidence that Bethany was the victim of foul play, or that Ronald was responsible for her disappearance, so until she can be found, we can only speculate about what actually happened here. Of course, the Disappeared episode still painted a much more flattering portrayal of Emile than Ronald. Yes, Emile could have had a potential motive to harm Bethany, since she vanished a short time after he learned she was cheating on him and had gotten pregnant, so I can see why you couldn't completely rule him out. But unlike Ronald, Emile did not have any known history of violence or abusive and controlling behavior, and during his interviews on Disappeared, he came across as a nice, down-to-earth, and pretty genuine guy. All that being said, one of the biggest obstacles with implicating or clearing anyone as a suspect in this case is that we have a window of about 3 weeks before Bethany was officially reported missing. So let's start talking about the timeline. Another thing which strikes me as bizarre is that there's conflicting information out there about how pregnant Bethany actually was at the time she went missing. Many of the sources state that she was 5 months pregnant, and it even says this on her original missing poster, but other sources state that she was 3 months pregnant. However, most of the sources also state that her child's projected due date was August the 7th, 2011, which is why investigators were being extra vigilant during that time period, in case they could find a record of anyone matching Bethany's description who gave birth. Well, if you do the math, this August due date would indicate that Bethany was only 3 months pregnant when she disappeared. That detail is pretty important, since it would shed some light on who the father of the unborn child might be. Most people assume that it was Ronald, and he was publicly identified as the father during some of the earliest media coverage of this case, but in an article published in the Washington Examiner, a spokesman for the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office confirmed that Emile was home from Afghanistan at the beginning of October 2010. Since this is the time period when Bethany is believed to have become pregnant, I guess it's technically not impossible for Emile to have been the father. Obviously, Emile did not find out about Bethany's pregnancy until he returned home on leave in January, but it's unclear when or if Bethany told Ronald about it. However, finding out that Bethany was pregnant with a child he did not want could have given Ronald a potential motive to make her disappear. It definitely seems clear that Bethany got involved with Ronald before Emile was deployed to Afghanistan, and even though Emile had his suspicions, Bethany did not actually confess the affair to him until January. But think about this. If Emile wanted to murder Bethany in retaliation for hearing this news, why would he spend several days on a Hawaiian vacation with her and then wait until after they got home in order to get rid of her? The trip to Hawaii is definitely one of the oddest details of this case for me. In spite of their personal problems, I can understand why Bethany and Emile still decided to take the vacation, as it had already been pre-booked, and I think they were hoping that this time together would help mend their marriage. But what really surprises me is that Ronald allowed Bethany to go. Remember, he was described as being so possessive and controlling that he would constantly text Bethany while she was out with friends and make her send photos of herself to show where she was at. I can't imagine he would have been too thrilled about her taking off to Hawaii for a week with her husband. The details are a bit murky, but I get the impression that Emil never lived with Bethany at her apartment in Ashburn because he was away for training and deployment most of the time, and when he was home on leave, he stayed elsewhere. I'm not sure when or if Emil found out that Ronald was crashing at Bethany's apartment. The last time Emil or anyone from Bethany's family saw her was when she abruptly left her grandparents' house during dinner after receiving an abundance of texts, and I think it's safe to assume those texts were from Ronald. You have to wonder if Ronald was extra angry about the fact that Bethany had just spent a week in Hawaii with Emil and was now having dinner with him, but his texts certainly made Bethany concerned enough to leave. However, as angry as Ronald may have been that night, we do know that Bethany was still alive the following day, since she called Carrabba's Italian Grill to confirm her work schedule, but obviously, something happened to her before she showed up to work her shift later that night. Now, on the surface, you might think that Emil had a pretty airtight alibi, since he was thousands of miles away in Afghanistan at the time Bethany was reported missing, but remember, the last confirmed sighting of her took place on January the 29th, and Emil did not leave to travel overseas until February the 2nd. So technically, if he wanted to, Emil still would have had enough opportunity to cause Bethany's disappearance, though he did cooperate with the police, and I get the impression they thoroughly checked into his whereabouts during that 4-day window. Emil has not officially been ruled out as a suspect, though unlike Ronald, he has never been named as a person of interest. I guess the main reason you can't officially rule anybody out is that Bethany was not reported missing until February the 19th, 3 weeks after she was last seen. I know that this part of the story has always struck people as very strange. Not only did Bethany stop showing up for her work shifts and her classes, but she never even made any attempt to contact anyone in her life or even check in on her son, Kai, who was in the care of Bethany's mother at that time. Bethany's family and friends have claimed that since she was often so busy, it was not uncommon for her to go dark and not contact anyone for long periods of time, but 3 weeks still seems insanely long, particularly since they seem to be aware of her issues with Ronald. I mean, hindsight is 20/20, but think about all the time the perpetrator would have had to cover their tracks. However, the most suspicious thing was Ronald's rather blasé attitude about not hearing from Bethany for that long. This is a recurring theme I've seen in quite a few missing persons cases where the victim is trapped in a relationship with a controlling, abusive person. When the victim was around, the spouse would go out of their way to check on them and pretty much keep track of their every movement, yet when the victim disappears without explanation and no one knows where they are, this same spouse suddenly becomes a lot less concerned and just seems content to move on with her life. It's almost like they're acting this way because they know exactly what happened. The story goes that Ronald vacated Bethany's apartment when her lease expired on January the 31st and she did not return, so he moved in with his mother. According to investigators, they did find evidence that Ronald did make attempts to contact Bethany after she went missing, so I'm assuming he called or texted her cell phone a few times. He also said that he just assumed Bethany was staying with her family, but we're talking about a guy who would follow Bethany to her mother's house and stay parked outside while she was visiting her. Given his past behavior, you'd think that if Ronald legitimately had no idea where Bethany was, he'd obsessively be searching for her and making constant contact with her family. The first time anyone really started becoming concerned is when suspicious posts and comments appeared on Bethany's Facebook account, which her friends did not believe were written by her. Indeed, given that there was no other activity from Bethany during this 3-week window besides these Facebook posts, it's very likely that she did not write them, and someone else was trying to give off the false impression that she was still alive. I know investigators were unable to conclusively prove who actually made those posts, but it was noted that the English in the writing was not great, and Ronald was a Bolivian immigrant. The poster had to have access to Bethany's account, and well, let's just say that it's not hard to imagine a controlling person demanding that their spouse provide them with their Facebook password so they can monitor all their communications. Since the lease was expiring, it's unclear to me if Bethany was planning to move out of her apartment at the end of the month. If she was, perhaps she had put her foot down and told Ronald that she was breaking up with him and he had to leave, which is what caused him to snap and finally kill her. Or maybe just finding out that Bethany was pregnant was the breaking point which caused him to do this. When you hear about what happened with Vicky Willoughby, it seems like Ronald had a pattern of shacking up with women and pretty much moving in with them by force so he could become a domineering presence in their lives. Again, if Ronald legitimately did not know where Bethany was, it seems very out of character for him to peacefully vacate Bethany's apartment and move on while making very little attempt to find her. The manner in which Bethany's Hyundai was parked outside her apartment complex raised her grandparents' suspicion, as it was very dusty, had a flat tire, and parked in such a crooked fashion to suggest that someone else had been driving it. I don't know how often Ronald drove, or if he even owned a vehicle, but if he got himself into a situation in which he needed to dispose of Bethany's body, he probably would have used the Hyundai to transport it before bringing it back to the apartment complex's parking lot. If he went to a very remote area which was tough to navigate, that might explain the flat tire and the dust on the vehicle. I know searches have been performed of some wooded areas and fields which were near the apartment complex, but they failed to turn up any clues about where Bethany might be. Once again, the biggest obstacle for the investigation is that 3 weeks passed before the police became involved, so whoever was responsible would have had plenty of time to cover their tracks and destroy evidence. So now we have to talk about Ronald's subsequent attack on Vicky Willoughby, which wound up taking this story in an extra terrifying direction. Even though Bethany's case got national coverage on Disappeared, it was beginning to fade from the spotlight until Ronald's attempted murder of Vicky. After that, the story started gaining additional exposure on shows like Crime Watch Daily, and Vicky even appeared on an episode of Dr. Phil titled, "Help, My Daughter is Addicted to Dangerous Men," in order to share her own cautionary tale about what can happen if you're trapped in a relationship with a violent, dangerous man. And of course, while Ronald was attacking Vicky, he told her that he could, quote-unquote, make people disappear, which is not something you want to hear from someone who's a person of interest in another woman's disappearance. It's always disturbing to me when someone is suspected of being responsible for the disappearance of their spouse, but there just isn't the evidence to prove it, and they subsequently get into a relationship with someone else and wind up harming them. As an example, you might recall when Unsolved Mysteries did a segment about the unsolved disappearance of a woman named Doreen Marfio. Her husband, Stephen Marfio, was suspected of murdering her, but without a body, the authorities could not prove anything. Years later, Stephen wound up in another troubled relationship which came to an end, and he responded by fatally shooting his estranged ex-girlfriend and wounding her new boyfriend before he turned the gun on himself. So what are the odds that a completely innocent person who was falsely accused of killing their spouse would then just decide to go on to murder another spouse? Sadly, since Stephen killed himself without revealing what happened to Doreen, the chances of ever recovering her body are not great. Well, the same logic applies to Ronald Rolden, and if he had not survived his gunshot wounds when Vicky shot him in self-defense, this may have destroyed all chances of ever finding out what happened to Bethany. While Bethany did describe some incidents in which Ronald was physical towards her, the violence he inflicted on Vicky was on a whole nother level, and I'm very disturbed at the idea that the same thing could have happened to Bethany before she went missing. If Vicky had not been able to shoot Ronald and escape, then she might very well have become a missing person as well. As it is, it's a miracle that Vicky survived, and she is a pretty brave and inspiring person who will not let the loss of her right eye prevent her from frequently appearing on television to share her story. And she also became a major advocate for Bethany and formed a close friendship with Kim Hunter. However, the way this particular case turned out in court leaves a lot to be desired. It seems apparent that the authorities must have screwed up in a huge way, as the broad wording of the search warrant meant that most of the evidence against Ronald was inadmissible, so even though there was zero doubt that Ronald was guilty of attempted murder, the district attorney's office would be unable to take him to trial for this charge, and instead settled for a plea deal in which Ronald only had to serve 6 to 8 years in prison. And this is pretty much a no-win situation for everyone involved. I know Vicky was terrified about the idea of Ronald getting out of prison and coming after her again, but it sounds like once he completes his sentence, he is going to be deported back to Bolivia. However, while this might keep Vicky safe, this will only give Ronald a potential chance to harm someone else in his native country, and given his history of violence and abuse, I definitely think there's a good chance that he's going to target another woman at the first available opportunity. And another major side effect is that this could completely derail the investigation into Bethany's disappearance. If Ronald is guilty, then he's probably the only person who knows the location of Bethany's remains, so if he gets shipped off to Bolivia, it's going to be a lot tougher to solve this case. If the investigation into Vicky's attempted murder had been handled correctly, and Ronald was potentially facing a lengthy prison sentence, then I can't help but wonder if the authorities might have had enough leverage to help convince Ronald to reveal what happened to Bethany. But as it is right now, Ronald is scheduled to leave prison within the next few years, possibly as early as January of 2021, and unless they find evidence which implicates him in Bethany's case before he faces deportation, he may be gone for good. In the years following Bethany's disappearance, her husband and her family publicly expressed hope that she had simply taken off and was hiding out somewhere in order to escape the immense pressures in her life. Unfortunately, since there is no record of her ever having given birth, and no trace of her at all for nearly a decade, it seems very likely that she was a victim of foul play, meaning that whoever was responsible not only murdered Bethany, but her unborn child as well. Given all the evidence, it really isn't much of a mystery who the perpetrator was, but until a body can be found, or someone is charged with this crime, this is technically still an unsolved missing persons case. Not only did Bethany leave behind a family and a husband, but a young son who would be around 11 years old today and still deserves answers about what happened to his mother. So if you happen to have any information on the whereabouts of Bethany Decker, please contact the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office at 703-777-0445. That's 703-777-0445. Anyway, another special thanks to Heather Engel for narrating the opening of this episode. If you already entered our contest before, you are automatically eligible for my next random drawing, so you don't have to do anything. But if you would like to enter and haven't done so yet, all you have to do is send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, naming the one unsolved cold case you would most like to see covered on this podcast. So once again, send me an email under the subject line, Trail Went Cold Contest, to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I released an episode about my top 10 favorite update segments from Unsolved Mysteries where cases were solved. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Mike R., Captain Bruce S., Kim F., Rebecca, and Kay Moss. Thank you all so much for your support. I also just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold.